This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Taking a look at the issues surrounding the health and well-being of our LGBTIQ+ communities. This is Well Well Well, brought to you by the team from Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network.
Coming to you from Thorn Harbour on Wurundjeri Country, I'm your host Rachel Cook, and welcome to our Lesbian Visibility Day episode, where we will be speaking with the lovely Rhianne Graco-Ilves, who is a health educator at Thorn Harbour Health, and they work across peer ed, outreach, appreach, and training. Rhianne was part of a panel we held at Thorn Harbour Health for staff as a celebration of Lesbian Visibility Day. We covered many topics, we went deep, and we also had a great laugh. So tonight we will revisit some of that conversation and also talk about the work that Rhianne does, just what is peer ed and outreach. And we are joined by Thorn Harbour Health staff member Rhianne Graco-Ilves, who is the health educator, peer ed, outreach, appreach, and training. As you said, it is quite the mouthful, as are a number of job titles at Thorn Harbour. We should have a workshop on getting our job titles down. But in the meantime, let's just start by unpacking your job a little bit. Can you take us through what peer ed actually is?
Peer ed. So it's an opportunity for people to come together in workshops, sessions with members of their community. And we have some workshops that are more structured, and there's activities and like a bit of an agenda of sorts, and then other workshops that are more social and kind of fluid. But the consistent thing across our peer education workshops is that they're all facilitated by our volunteers, and they are each a member of the community for the workshop they're leading.
And in terms of, you know, how do you find your peer ed facilitators? How does that work?
So we do recruitment namely through our volunteer information nights. So I think we run those every second month. And it's a really nice opportunity to come in and hear from myself as well as other representatives from different areas in Thorn Harbour where we're looking for volunteer recruitment. So that's mostly where we find our people, but we also do recruitment. Word of mouth is a great one. We get folks who might have experience in roles like teaching, or they're in, you know, the mental health sector, or, you know, that they might sort of come from an experienced role and wanting to offer that experience in a volunteering way. But equally, I think most of our volunteers are actually folks who really just want an opportunity to give back to their community and, you know, be a part of those workshops, which are really fun and social. And, you know, a lot of people make sort of lifelong friends. We've got some really great stories when it's now called Magnetic, but I think back in the day it was called Young and Gay, which I hate that we lost that title because Young and Gay is a workshop title, is pretty iconic. But we had, I believe there is a couple there who met each other back in the day and they're still married. So just an indication of some of the lifetime relationships or friendships that come out of those peer education sessions.
And what about outreach? Can you just give us a brief outline? So I want to go back a bit later on and talk about outreach in more depth, but a brief outline of what outreach actually is.
Yeah, I find it hard to do a brief outline because I'm very passionate about outreach.
Don't worry, we're going to get back to it.
So the abridged version is that outreach is where our volunteers are out in spaces with community. So that might be sex on premises venues or community parties. We also go into events like university, like orientation stalls and that kind of thing. So we're in spaces face-to-face with community and sharing information with them about sexual health. And empowering them, providing resources, sexual health products. That's the short version.
Okay. We will come back to outreach. Yeah. That's a definite. But I wanted to actually get into what this episode of Well is actually focused on this week. And it is Lesbian Visibility Week. And we actually had a panel at Thorn Harbour this week discussing some of the issues that LGBTQ women are facing in a variety of ways. And we also talked about some much lighter stuff as well. But I wanted to first ask you, what did you take out of that panel, like especially around visibility and what that means?
I think visibility in the way of like having a panel and having this sort of space carved out for us to talk about our lived experience, what that word means to us, what lesbian community means to us, the sort of problems that we may or may not face. I think what I take for granted is that we don't often have those opportunities and time literally carved out in the day of asking people to come along and really listen to, you know, what is important to us and why. So I think that was a really powerful moment as someone, you know, speaking for myself, coming into my identity later in life. I've not really had that or really sort of been able to lean into these opportunities about visibility. So yeah, I think the takeaway is just like providing that opportunity for people to feel seen and understood and a level of appreciation, I think, for what that experience brings to this type of work as a community health organization, as folks who are a part of the community that we are also working for.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the points that was made yesterday is that people can often think of visibility just in terms of media representation around the film and TV, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, that's been improving in leaps and bounds over, you know, especially recent years. But it is about having a seat at the table. It is about, and it is about actually even having a table. And we know that in recent times, especially for LBQ women, that there has been very little space at that table, and we've sort of watched other communities demand and get that space, which is absolutely brilliant. I think in some ways we can't also just say, well, why haven't we been given that space when we perhaps haven't been as vocal as we should be? I think that there's a shift that's happening, especially in government levels, where that is changing. So yeah, but as you say, it's important that we have that sort of representation across the board. Can we talk about, which we know is happening in regards to identifying in multiple ways, and especially, you know, this has been really reflected in the term queer, which has been something that I know I certainly embraced in the 90s. And what we see in the SWASH survey and in our own Thorn Harbour Health survey is that when we are asking LGBTIQ women how they identify, what we get a lot is people choosing lesbian and or queer, and also cis and binary. Can we talk about this, you know, your thoughts on what's happening with the way that we're identifying now? Because I know you and I are both people that do use multiple identities.
Yeah. I think, and I guess I can only speak for my experience in the sense of like as someone who holds multiple titles or uses multiple titles for myself. And I think there's a couple of elements to it. I think one part of it is that having the ability to choose different labels for me, and perhaps this resonates for other people, is that it's an acknowledgement of the fluidity of sexuality and the fluidity of gender. As we say, you know, gender and sexuality are spectrums and everyone's on it, regardless of whether you're queer or straight. Like, if we want to boil it down to this sort of binary, you know, straight on one end and queer on the other, then everyone is on that in some way, shape or form. And for me, there's sort of this level of flexibility within that that I really appreciate. So in one part, it's that spectrum element. I think the other part to this is an element of safety and coding. I think that when, as queer people, when we're in certain spaces or with certain people, there are titles that may make more sense or feel safer in certain environments. I might be at my doctor and feel safer for me to say I'm gay, and they can just sort of say, oh, okay, you're, you know, quote unquote female, and if you're gay, that means you're quote unquote, you know, having sex with females. So that just sort of like might be, oh yeah, I use gay there, or I use queer there because, or I use lesbian there because it just minimizes those assumptions, rather than having to go into detail with someone about the type of, you know, bodies that I have experiences with, the different genders of the people that I have experiences with. So there may be an element of coding and safety in certain spaces, whereas if someone's out among community, they might feel more liberated to use other titles. But I think they're a part of owning multiple experiences, and I sort of talked about this yesterday, and that to have multiple titles, you know, if we're talking about gender, the idea of like referring to yourself as both cis and non-binary, is that perhaps there's sort of this representation of having or holding those experiences at the same time, honoring your history as a cis person perhaps and your present and future as a non-binary person, that all of that boils into part of who we are and where we've landed in a gender journey. And that can mean absolutely everything about who we are. And equally, it can kind of say, well, gender means nothing. And so therefore, I can be everything.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that sort of all or nothing type of view as well, like, and everything in between, that's what you experience. And as we're finding more and more language, I don't think we're there yet. Mm. I don't feel like I'm there yet. But it's sort of nice, I guess, for me going, well, there's nothing that I do have to lock into. You know, that's certainly a big shift that's mm. come in recent times and with the new language that we have. One of the things that came up was this great term that I love, courageous conversations. And I think, as we all agree, that's something that we need to have more of. And there are reasons why, I guess, we can be a little bit risk adverse these days. We need to be, you know, aware of being the language that we use and being as inclusive as possible, but also making sure that everyone within the community is having an equal voice, especially within LGBTIQ women's communities. What do you think are the conversations that LGBTIQ women, and I'm going to include also non-binary folk within that as well, because we know that a lot of us do identify as both. What are some of the courageous conversations that we should be having?
I think a courageous conversation in an organization like Thornhaber and by extension in community is a greater emphasis on, I guess, like the health issues or health concerns, but also the way that we celebrate LGBTQ plus women. You know, obviously a lot of emphasis on, you know, queer men, the campaigns that we run are largely for queer men or MSM. And I just wish that we saw that level of celebration for women and non-binary folk and trans folk. As was said on the panel, like, we have really great sex and really hot sex, and it would be, I think, really liberating to see an emphasis on that and celebrating our health and well-being in a sexual context, because for our community, it's, you know, as folks who were assigned female at birth and or socialized as women growing up, there is still oppression around our expression of sexuality. And I still think there are a lot of those barriers that we need to break down. I think celebrating our sexualities is a really big way forward. I think breaking stigma, I think stigma and how we really tackle that is a big part of liberating us more, empowering us more, making us more visible.
I completely agree with you, and the levels of shame that can be that associated, and the stories that we're told as young girls. That's what surprises me when I speak as a Gen Xer, when I speak to younger generations, how nothing seems to have shifted, that we are still, those same tropes and stories are still thrown out to us from the moment we draw breath. And there's just so much unpacking that we have to do over the decades of our lives. And, you know, I think that, like, that's, it was the idea around us creating campaigns and workshops that address this. It's certainly something that I can see that is shifting within the community, but it's taking a long time.
Yeah.
What about in terms of the broader community as well? Like, you know, what do we think needs, do they need to be doing better? Like, what we know is we have just really for the first time started getting funding from the government when it comes to LGBTIQ women's health. It's there has been funding for, I think, every other community within our subcultures, but not in this area, which is shocking, but at the same time, fantastic that it is finally happening. But apart from that, what do you think needs to shift within the broader community in terms of how they see LGBTIQ women's space within that? Because what we know that happens is that they conflate our health and cultural issues with the general population. They see gay men's issues as being quite separate, and that they need the funding and they need the support to, and they have had for decades now, which we know is from the HIV crisis, but that has spilled over into many different areas now, which is brilliant, and I wish the rest of us would catch up. But what is it that they need to do to see that, well, actually, there are differences here as well that need to be prioritised?
Yeah. I think the frustration about, like, funding is that it all is contingent on these really robust empirical studies that get done, and provided that there's enough sort of like scientific studies, then funding can be put behind it. But what we know is that, like, as a starting point, LBQ plus women haven't actually been prioritized in any studies, because firstly, we've been kind of invisibilized in many ways. And then to actually be prioritized and said, yeah, like, your health needs, the concerns that you have in your life are very different to gay men and what came out of the AIDS epidemic. To have that acknowledged is really exciting. And that's, like, the, you know, the studies that, like, Latrobe are doing, is listening to that the other day, the details about that, is really exciting to sort of say, hey, we are really making a concerted effort to acknowledge how your lives are so different, and therefore we need to focus on different areas. So yeah, there's sort of that, like, the science part of it that has been frustratingly, funding needs that kind of side of things. So it's exciting to see us being included more and more in research.
Let's get back into outreach, because I think it's something not many people in the broader community, when I'm talking about LGBTIQ community, would know about unless you see you are at events doing this work. Mm. What are some of the events that you attend for LGBTIQ women?
So we are increasingly having a presence at Ladylike. So that is an event for LGBTQT plus women, which is hosted at Wet on Wellington. So for those who don't know, Wet on Wellington is one of the last standing gay saunas. And excitingly, they have in the last sort of couple of years, I would say, started creating events specifically for LGBTQT plus women. So Ladylike is an event that now happens at Wet on Wellington in Collingwood on the fifth Monday of each month, wherever there's a fifth Monday. So it works out being about six times a year, I think. But they also have events down at Shed 16, which is in Frankston. So that's an event where downstairs is like a social area. There's a pool, there's a sauna, there's shower and locker facilities, there's a spa. So we're down there on that's kind of like social level and doing, you know, passive outreach where we're just kind of, we're at a table, come have a talk to us. If you see us, come say hi, ask us sexual health questions, grab some freebies.
And what's the engagement like? Like, you know, what do people actually come up to you and want to know?
Oh, we get all sorts of really incredible questions, depending on the event. But with a LGBTQT plus community of women, we might be talking about barrier methods of, we might be talking about other social events. We might be talking about peer workshops and what other services Thorn Harbour runs. The conversations really vary. People might want to know about PEP and PrEP. People might want to know about kink and sexually adventurous resources, which, you know, we're always on the mission to do more of. We get all sorts of questions. Depends on the event, as I said, but we have some really candid chats about, you know, someone might ask, oh, I had this particular experience, you know, does a particular sexual activity put me at risk of, you know, certain STIs, or what can I do to reduce my STI risk or my HIV transmission risk, if that's, yeah, like we get all sorts of questions.
It's such a great service. It's amazing that it actually exists now. And I love that there is, you know, such great engagement around a wide variety of issues. Tell me something, what is it that you love about your job? And you can talk about peer ed and outreach.
Yeah.
And the rest of it as well.
Yeah. I think what I love about my job is the amount of opportunities that I have to remain in touch with community, to be face-to-face with community, to be working directly with volunteers. You know, this organization survives on the back of volunteers and the effort that they put in and the work that they do and their commitment to giving back to community. Like, we wouldn't be here without them. And so being in a role where I get to spend, you know, the majority of my time working directly with volunteers is really satisfying. But I also love, you know, the kind of legacy that I get to honour when it comes to peer ed and outreach. I mean, outreach in particular, and this is, you know, what I mentioned before when I get really excited talking about it. Outreach was practically the first thing that we did as a grassroots community health org. You know, like when we kicked off, it was about, you know, how can we just talk to folks in community, get them information so that they're empowered to make choices about having a satisfying, pleasurable sex life in the face of all of this other, you know, stigma and shame that was being pushed down on us. And we're still battling that, and we're still having those conversations about, hey, here's the information that could help you experience more pleasure, that could experience more freedom in the face of all of the shame that we still come into contact with about sexual health and sexual expression and sexual pleasure. And so it feels like a real privilege to be able to carry on this legacy of something that's, you know, older than me. And I mentioned at the Frida conference how you know, Tex McKenzie, one of our beloved colleagues, started doing outreach the same year that I was born. And so for me to now be in this outreach role is just, yeah, it just feels like an immense privilege to be able to keep doing this work and keeping it alive in honour of how it all started.
Yeah, that's, yeah, well said. And it's just such a fantastic correlation thinking about Tex, you know, doing that and I think, yeah, great to hear you honouring the work that Tex has done in our community, because it has been incredible. Rhianne, thank you so much for joining us today and taking us through Lesbian Visibility Day and trying to unpack all of those complex issues and also the incredible work that you're doing at Thorn Harbour. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's all we have time for on Well, Well, Well. Thanks for joining us for another episode. And thank you to our guest, Rhianne Greco-Ilves, who is from Thorn Harbour Health, a health educator there, who also shared their insights into what Lesbian Visibility Day and Week means to them, and also some great insight into the work they do around outreach work in the community. Don't forget, if you'd like to listen to our other podcasts, head to joy.org.au/well well well. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Well Well Well, supported by Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network. For more LGBTIQ+ health and wellbeing and much more, check out Thorn Harbour on social media at Thorn Harbour or via the website thornharbour.org.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.